south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Boy, are we going to agitate some people today. As a dog returns to its vomit, we're going to revisit the subject of COVIDiot vaccine hacks that are being tried here in Latin America and succeeding. And man, it's the kind of stuff you could never get away with up in the States. But down here, well, this is Latin America, you know. So definitely keep listening and pay attention, because this is really amazing stuff. Disclaimer here, I'm not advocating you do anything illegal. Again, I'm just pointing out what lots of astute and very smart expats are doing in response to the lunacy involved with the COVIDiot vax thing and their response to it. It's kind of like a situation in the military where your commanding officer gives you an order that's unjust or immoral. Most subordinates will obey, because if they don't, they'll get court-martialed or end up in the slammer. Whereas a few others who have a strong moral compass will just refuse to do it and accept the consequences. In other words, it's black and white in the military. There are no hacks. And when given an order that's unjust or immoral, you do it or suffer the consequences. That's how things are up in the States. But here in Latin America, well, rules can be very flexible, meant to be bent, even broken. We'll get to that story in a minute. But first, the question is, why do dogs and politicians return to their own vomit? Well, you'd be better off asking, what is the meaning of life? Anyway, on a lighter and less disturbing note, you know, I mentioned many times before that Latinos love clothing with English words and sayings on them. You know, t-shirts, sweatshirts, even if they don't understand what they actually say. Doesn't matter. Having English sayings on your clothes is cool. In fact, there was a time many years ago when very few Latinos had any such thing. And when I first started going back and forth to Latin America and getting some boots on the ground in the 1980s, Latino friends would tell me when I asked them, you want me to bring anything back? They'd say, yeah, playeras americanas, por favor. That'd be American t-shirts, of course, with English words and phrases on them. And when I bring them back down and pass them around, to them it was like Christmas time. Of course, nowadays they make most of those t-shirts here in Latin America, so they're everywhere. Which brings me back to the original point that Latinos rarely know the words and phrases on their own t-shirts. Unless, of course, it's a simple thing like a sports hero or sports team. So anyway, just yesterday I was in a bank and a 20-something Latino guy with the requisite tattoos and fake gold necklace bling walked in with a t-shirt that said, get this now, assholes are people too. Well, truer words were never imprinted on a t-shirt. And I thought maybe he does and maybe he doesn't know what it really means. Though it's a hell of a statement, nevertheless. Nothing I'd ever wear. Why state the obvious? Now, speaking of expat Addy, because that vaccine hack I was telling you about earlier has everything to do with him. The other day he phoned me up and said, John, do you think in the future there'll be a white people museum where woke people will pay to see what white people used to be like they pay to go to see World War II battlefields and Civil War cemeteries and places like Hitler's bunker and Auschwitz? Then Eddie said, now here's an idea, a white privilege museum. But if I did it, he said, I'd make sure there was some mention of the 99.99% of inventions, discoveries, and conveniences, like modern medicine, the internet, computers, and smartphones, created almost exclusively by those dastardly white privileged scientists, doctors, and engineers. Think about it, Eddie said. If we could just turn back the hands of time and eliminate from our past history all those white privileged a-holes, right now we'd be huddling around the campfire with our trusty slingshots, roasting wabbits, chewing beef jerky, sharpening up the arrow points, and marveling at the wonders of nature, wondering if we're ever going to make it to that ripe old age of 35. But I digress. Man, did I digress. But that's what Expat Eddie had to say, and I thought he had a point there. Oh, and by the way, here's a little romantic advice and some tips for all you guys, I'm talking about men, who come on down here to Latin America. Don't want to leave you women, you gringas, out, but this advice solely applies to men. You see, once you arrive here in Latin America, you'll soon start to realize that ladies, Latinas that is, pretty much address everyone they meet casually with the term amor, which means love, of course. If not amor, they'll use the word cariño, which translates to sweetheart. Again, it's kind of a throwback to ladies in the 40s, 50s, and 60s back in the States who often would address a person they didn't know too well at all as sweetheart, darling, or honey. Back then, everyone knew it was not about romance at all, just a friendly figure of speech. And if you recall, in a lot of the early gangster movies in the 30s and 40s, Even guys would call their friends and acquaintances sweetheart. You might remember those Cagney and Bogart movies. You're asking for it, sweetheart. Though now that we're in the 21st century, people don't use those terms much anymore. Not with people they don't know. But here in Latin America, a girl gets into a cab, it's, take me to so-and-so street, cariño, or amor. You're talking to the bank teller, and she says, what can I do for you today, cariño? Meaning sweetheart. That's why here and there you hear from fresh green gringos that they believe the lady on the phone, the operator, or customer service lady, the bank teller or young lady at the hardware store, is passing them subtle romantic signals. I'm here to tell you, you're wrong. Oh, that's not to say most Latinos wouldn't love to have a gringo boyfriend, husband, whatever, because, you know, that gringo advantage and all that comes with being a gringo. Even the poorest of us on a $1,500 a month Social Security check is making about 3 or 4 times the average bank teller wage. But that's not what we're discussing here. We're discussing the fact that ladies here in Latin America seem so much more friendly and throw that love and cariño thing around so often that sometimes we, that is, us gringos and expats, especially fresh new green ones, get the wrong idea. Remember, they're just being their nice, normal, friendly, obliging selves. So guys, keep that in mind. The next girl you casually meet, when she throws around those terms, she does it to everyone. Don't think you're special. Though if there really is a spark there, you could pursue it. It might work, especially if you've noticed that she looked at your right hand for a second. Most often, she's checking for a wedding ring. Oh, and did you know that in most Latin American countries, the wedding ring goes on the right hand, not the left? Now, as far as catching a lady scoping out your right hand, many gringos I've known over the years have mentioned that even shopping at the hardware store or at a local food mart, they've noticed that too. Just saying. So all you sneaky guys out there, beware. If you take off your wedding ring, she still just might notice the lack of the tan mark where that ring was removed. Because you know down here the sun is strong and your hand will tan too. Again, just saying. Women have an eye for things like that. Especially here in Latin America where a whole lot of cheating is going on. Which brings us to this email, a true gringo expat success story, and so much more. This comes from one of my expat insider seminar alumnus, Mr. M, who's made a real great transition to life here in Latin America. Mr. M entitles this email, 2.5 years into my new Latin American life. Now, remember, the stories he tells in this email might sound wild and crazy, but they could happen to you. They happened to me. So let's get into this, and I'll comment where needed. He says, hi, Johnny. It's been about 2.5 years since I moved down to Latin America. Things are going well. I've been bouncing around between Colombia, Guatemala, and Mexico. I'm here in Guatemala City now for the 4th time. I even started a successful online business here. I'm up to about 15 employees now. Also reversed an undiagnosed health problem that was present for at least 5 years before I landed here. Yes, life is much better down here. Today I've got a couple of questions for you, Johnny. Number one. I moved into a really high-end building here in Guatemala City. The apartment is a palace. It even has 5 working bathrooms. Haha. A great rooftop pool, jacuzzi, sauna, a couple of lounges, and a cinema. My place is much nicer than my friends' places, so my spot is a place to be, a place that people come for pool parties, etc. Obviously, everyone who comes takes photos for social media purposes because it is a really nice place. I even post a few photos myself sometimes. My question is, what's the danger here? Do you think I might be targeted by criminals? All right, me, Johnny here. Let me answer that question before we get deeper into this. Mr. M, it all depends who you're hanging out with. And if most of your new friends are ones you met in that building, that means they're on the same level as you, socioeconomically speaking. And no one's going to target you for anything because they've already got what they need and they're living in nice places. However, if you start inviting people from outside of your immediate vicinity, people you meet on the street, in the bars, health clubs, malls, etc., they could seem very nice. Problem is, most gringos are very friendly and they'll invite people over to their house they don't know very well. They don't have the backstory. When I first arrived, I was guilty of that too. So, rule number one, you should never invite anyone over to your house socially unless you know where they live, because the neighborhood a person lives in tells everything about them. Remember, everyone down here is putting on the dog. Number two, if you don't know a person's backstory, don't invite them in your house. And really, I'd make it a rule that no one gets to take selfies or pictures of your place either. Why should you let them? Then you're inviting every idiot on Facebook and Instagram to have a look at your place and what you've got. Oh, and if you're living in a high-end district or building, you'll be rubbing shoulders with high-level politicians, bureaucrats, and military types too. Funny thing is, they'll always seem to have a lot more things and money that their salary could possibly support. Funnier yet, if you're their friend, they'll always admit to working certain angles. Meanwhile, up by you, politicians and high-level military types will lie. But everybody knows they're working their own angles too. whereas down here, they're honest about being dishonest. Now, if you live in a high-end district, you'll be tempted to wear bling and designer clothes like all the Latinos in your area. Nope, not good. I advise against it. If you do, you're asking for trouble. You don't want to stand out. Though I know lots of gringos and expats come from that type of environment up in the States. They're always keeping up with the Joneses, displaying what they have, addicted to posting that stuff on anti-social media, too. When you do that, you're stacking the odds against yourself. Because, you know, if I was a thief, and I think I'd be a pretty good one, that would be exactly the kind of person I'd want to target. A bad guy wouldn't think of robbing a backpacker when there's a lady across the street, sitting in her Range Rover, dicking with her cell phone with the window rolled down. So, Mr. M, though it might be a bit too late, I think you have to lay down some rules for your guests. Now, I don't want to scare you, but you can be sure the inside of your apartment, and probably your face too, is in the cloud and smartphone memory of everyone who's been there and all their hundreds, even thousands of fake internet friends. As you know, most upscale Latinos, and especially their kids, are very materialistic and absolutely love to post where they've been on anti-social media and visiting your place with the lounges, the pool, the jacuzzi, and the cinema. Well, having a gringo friend like you gives them supreme bragging rights because, as mentioned in previous shows, upscale Latinos love to have a gringo friend. It's a feather in their hat. More bragging rights. Now, there are, of course, upscale Latinos that aren't superficial and shallow. Maybe someday I'll even meet one. And of course, there are millions of upscale Americans in the States with that same attitude. But believe me, you ain't seen nothing yet until you mix with the upscale crowd down here. That's when you'll truly know the extent of the term extreme gringo wannabe-ism. Yep, another ism. You heard it here first, I just invented it. But note, if you're living smack dab on the gringo tourist trail, you probably won't have much of a chance to meet too many upscale VIP Latinos. The really high rollers are way up in the military or government. But when you're living off the gringo tourist trail, you'll be amazed at how fast that crowd sucks you right in. For example, some years ago, before I was in the house I'm in now, I lived in a nice gated guarded community just outside Guatemala City. And there were all kinds of so-called high rolling Latinos living there, though a lot of them were simply putting on the dog. A good percentage of them were months behind on their maintenance payments. Aside from that, one guy a couple of doors down was a general in the Guatemalan army. He was one of two Guatemalan generals I got to know pretty well. He used to pass by walking his dog every day. Soon enough, he started inviting me to his house and then to parties. He even invited me to a special ceremony where the president of the country awarded him some medal for some stupid thing or other. Oh, and besides drinking, his hobby was amateur woodworking. And when he saw I had a whole bunch of woodworking equipment in the garage myself, all of a sudden, one day, a military van pulled up in front of my house, and a couple of grunts offloaded about 10 beautiful teak planks, about a foot wide, 2 inches thick, and about 8 foot long. I was astounded because I knew up in the States that amount and quality of wood would cost me a couple of grand at least. He said, if you need more, let me know. Because you see, he said up north towards Mexico in the very unpopulated areas of Guatemala, it's all jungle and loaded with teak forests. Anyway, we had lots of nice long talks. And that's when he told me a startling fact. He said one stealth bomber in the U.S., just one, cost as much as one entire year's outlay in money for the Guatemalan military. It's hard to wrap your mind around that, isn't it? It's a fun fact that's rather comforting when you think about it. That means the military in a country like Guatemala is so underfunded and ill-equipped, really not much of a threat to anyone at all. And that's a good thing. Oh, and did I tell you that guy could really drink? There's something else I didn't know, and you probably didn't either. He said all the high-ranking generals, colonels, and such did mandatory training, guess where? In the U.S., some kind of agreement all Latin American-friendly countries have with the U.S., high-ranking officers get a free trip to the U.S. to train outside of Washington, D.C. somewhere for a few months. By the way, his English was excellent. And did I tell you how much this guy could drink? So as I got invited to more and more parties, I soon enough realized that almost all the colonels and the generals in the Guatemalan army, as well as Honduras, Panama, El Salvador, and most Latin countries, nearly all the high-ranking military guys were taller and lighter skinned than the grunts. In fact, my general buddy was half Guatemalan and half Italian, so he was really white and rather tall. Now, I was never so indiscreet as to ask him why that was so, but it was obvious that the officers' training schools, you know, their version of West Point and all that, much preferred tall, privileged Latinos in their ranks. To put it another way, the military forces in Latin America, as well as those pusbag political elites, display the most blatant classism that I've ever seen. But I've learned that's not something they want to discuss. But I digress. Where were we? Oh, yeah. Mr. M's second question. This question absolutely relates to what we've been talking about. Number two. He says, Johnny, I've been rubbing shoulders with some of the local elite.
The owner of a famous rum company keeps a next-door apartment as a party apartment. And just last weekend, I was on my balcony and these three drunk Colombian models came out onto their balcony and invited me over to that place. Nice work, if you can get it. Also, last week, I met a nephew of the vice president of Guatemala. I went out with him a couple of times, along with his bodyguard, who was as cool as a cucumber. I don't know if you watched the show Breaking Bad, but this bodyguard had that vibe of an assassin that cleans up crime scenes, just like a guy on that show. To me, he didn't seem like the garden variety bodyguards here that stand around and kind of look bored all the time. It got me a little worried, thinking maybe there was some kind of narco involvement. So I tried to distance myself a bit from the guy, but he seems to want to hang out more and more with me. All right, Mr. M, just another comment here. Can't you see, since you're living way off the gringo tourist trail, you are that very definition of the gringo upscale Latins want to have as a hangout buddy. You know, expat Eddie, who's made his mark here in Latin America, he's got plenty of upscale Latino acquaintances who want him as their gringo hangout buddy, too. Though he says he mostly avoids it, sometimes he does go out with them. Oh, and if you come down to my next Expat Insider Seminar, I hope it launches before the end of the year. All depends on those brain-dead COVIDiots in charge. Anyway, if you come down, you'll get to meet Captain Mango, who has similar tales of being yanked into upscale Latino society, simply by virtue of the fact that he moved into an apartment complex and was the only gringo in the place, and his landlord, a pretentious upscale gringo wannabe, decided he wanted the good captain to be his gringo hangout buddy. Captain Mango has tales to tell, believe me. But back to Mr. M's email. He says, Johnny, I've been trying to distance myself from the guy who's the nephew of the vice president of Guatemala, but he still wants me to be his hangout buddy. Now, here's a bit of a funny story. My new friends invited me to a popular bar in a nice upscale area of Guatemala City. All right, let's stop for a second. Me, Johnny here. He mentions the name, but I'm not going to say it on the air because I know that place well. My band played there a couple of times, and we got stiffed by the owner, an Australian drunk, who's also a well-known wife beater. It just goes to show you that gringos and expats, even irritable, dislikable dickheads like the Australian guy, can become big successes, simply because they build a better mousetrap, which ain't hard, considering Latin American competition. Anyway, Mr. M says, some of my friends invited me to this bar, and so I brought my new friend and his stoic bodyguard. He orders a beer, takes one sip, eats half of my other friend's pizza, then says he's bored, leaves, and pays the bill for the whole damn table. Ha ha, some exit. The question is, Johnny, is it dangerous for me to associate with someone so closely connected to the government? Well, here's my answer, Mr. M. Two words, no worries. It's good to have friends in high places, even if they're corrupt. Well, they're all corrupt. And here's how I play it. I have some Latin buddies like that, and I remain friends with them, and they do invite me to stuff, and I don't go to all the events, that's for sure. I pick and choose them, but I pretty much never invite them to anything. So I remain in contact, in case you know I do need a quick favor. I remain on good terms, but don't get too personal at all. So then what do I mean by in case I have to call in some favors? Well, suppose I needed some passport or residency paperwork, and it's clogged up in the system, like things will do, and even worse with the COVIDiot stuff. Just a phone call to one of these connections, and that stuff can get untangled in a New York second. You know, it can be exciting and feels a little dangerous sometimes when you're with them. These guys will elevate your adrenaline. Now, if your life's boring, maybe you could use a little excitement injected into your life. The thing is, when you get older, you don't want to look back and say to yourself, maybe I should have taken a chance, gone to that party, taken that trip. Old people tell me all the time there's nothing worse than having those kinds of regrets. Would you rather lay on the couch this weekend, stare at your iPhone, or watch the tube? If that suits you, you can stay in Cleveland. You don't need to get out of Dodge. By the way, if you're wondering what kind of business Mr. Expat M has created for himself, he says he offers a virtual course teaching new salespeople how to network and find online jobs. He says he's got a Facebook group of 7,000 people, which we organically market to with content and Facebook Lives, whatever that is. The obvious benefit, he says, of running it virtually is that we run people through our course constantly. Well, Mr. M, congratulations. Nice going. And finally, he says, Johnny, if you're ever downtown Guatemala City and want to meet up and hang out, just let me know. I'll be here for the next 3 months or so. Signed, Mr. M. Well, thanks for that, Mr. M. Keep checking in, will you? I'm waiting for that invite to one of your parties. Now, speaking of getting out of Dodge, I've been getting tons of emails from people putting their own plan B together. Like, for example, Mr. E, who's signed up for the next Expat Insider Seminar. It says, hey, Johnny, we were on our way to applying for Panama residency, and now they once again lock down parts of the country. We were there in February when the armed guard checkpoints and lockdown curfews were right in our faces. Why should we escape from one tyranny for one that might even be worse? Please don't say you told me so. I should have listened. Though I did listen to you on Bitcoin and Ethereum. Great story here. I was on vacation in Florida, walking on the beach, listening to your podcast, and you explained a bit about Ethereum. I had some Bitcoin, but nothing else at the time. I had just read a few other things about Ethereum, too, and your recommendation was the tipping point for action. In the middle of the beach, I pulled out my phone and bought a bunch of it when it was under $1,200. Boom. All right, me, Johnny here. Yep, he's tripled his money at least. Anyway, he says, we have a trip planned in June and July for 2.5 weeks in Panama and 2.5 weeks in Guatemala. We've been in touch with a Panama lawyer for preliminary steps, but have not committed any funds. The draw for us for Panama was the cost, the ease of travel into Panama City, and the limited number of days you have to spend in the country, and ultimately, the pensionado benefits they give retirees. We also enjoy the beauty of the Boquete area and the beaches around Old Town Panama City. But Guatemala, too, has its advantages. It's beautiful and seems to be a bit less authoritarian than Panama. We tried to attend your seminar, but you gave us a refund when the COVIDiot panic hit. We thank you for that. But is there a way we can just work with your attorney and make all of this happen regarding residency and such outside of the seminar? Can you put us in contact with him? Appreciate any help and thanks for the twice a week reality check. Signed, Mr. E. Thanks for that, Mr. E. No problem. Sure thing about getting in touch with the seminar lawyer. Matter of fact, getting residency and going to the seminar are two separate things, but they can be combined in the same trip. Many people come down just for the seminar, and they don't get their residency started at all, or they wait a couple of months or years before they get going on it. Others get started right away on it, and some people have to arrange things up in the States, and it takes time. Could take weeks, months, or years to get your personal life in order. But again, they're two separate things. You can come down, I'll introduce you to my lawyer, and you could get started on residency and skip the seminar completely. Or you can come down to the seminar or do both, though it's much more convenient to do both because you're here and don't have to make an extra trip down, killing two birds with one stone. Oh, and one more thing. When people say to me, Johnny, I got started already on my residency in Panama, Mexico, Uruguay, whatever. It's in progress, but things have changed. I don't much like their government anymore. You think I should just cut my losses and skip it? Well, my opinion, the more the merrier, especially if the object is to eventually get nationality and a passport. So if you're in the process of getting residency somewhere and it's not complete yet, I'd advise, even if you're not looking to live in that country because you see some problems with it, do go through with the residency part anyway. It could very well come in handy. You never know. Now, speaking of Panama, and there's a lot of gringo expats there. Well, I just found out from expat Eddie that some of his friends there have come up with a very good COVIDiot vaccine hack. Actually, two different hacks. We're talking about people who absolutely refuse to get the vaccination, but they have to travel, so somehow they got to prove they've got one. Turns out one of expat Eddie's buddies in Boquete, Panama, speaking of Boquete, he walked into one of the COVIDiot vax clinics, filled out the forms and paid for the vaccine, and when he went into the cubicle and was told to roll up his sleeve, he told the nurse a whopper. He said, listen, lady, I had the vaccine back in the States a month or so ago, and when I came down here to Panama, I got robbed. My wallet, some dough, and my COVIDiot card, too. So, here's what I'd like you to do if you can. Save that vaccination you're going to give me for someone else and just fill out a card for me. I'm already vaccinated. All I need is a card showing I've been vaxxed. Of course, I paid for the vaccination, he said to her. Give it to someone else who needs it. And if you jab me right now again, I'll be getting the vaccination twice, and that's not good, judging by all the side effects you read about. And guess what? Sure, he told a whopper, but it worked. Now, of course, a move like that would be impossible to pull off up in the States, but down here, you know, this is Latin America. But that's not all. Expat Eddie told me of another gringo friend in Panama. He also had a very clever COVIDiot vaccine hack. And the whole thing worked in his favor because he's of Latino descent and his name is strictly Latino and not recognizably gringo at all. Here's how it worked. He said to his maintenance guy, you go down to the clinic and get vaxxed. I'll pay for it, he said. And of course, every pea brain in Latin America wants to get vaxxed. So he jumped at the chance. And the gringo said, but I want you to use my name. So he gave his maintenance guy some dough. He went down to the vax clinic, stood in line, waited his turn, filled out the forms, and put his employer, his gringo boss's name down. So he got vaxxed all right. But his COVIDiot passport CDC card has his boss's name on it. Talk about killing two birds with one stone.
his maintenance guy ever so grateful that he got the stupid vaccination because they're all convinced it works, you know. And his gringo boss got a vax card completely registered, signed, and sealed. Of course, his maintenance guy's going to have to go back in 3 weeks and get the second dose, but he's very glad to do it. Again, that's something that can only happen in Latin America or some other third world country where a certain amount of chaos and confusion prevails. And strict and formal record keeping? Well, you know how Latin Americans feel about details. Anyway, once again, a disclaimer. In no way am I advocating you do anything illegal. I'm just the messenger telling you about how certain gringos and expats hack or game the system when they feel Big Brother or local government has gone off the rails. And finally, today we've got reason 5,426 why it's absolutely imperative for your own sanity to get the hell out of Dodge. Now, I'm reading an article about solar power that just came out yesterday, coming out of Australia. It says, in March, the Australian Energy Market Commission, AEMC, released its draft of a new set of laws regarding solar and users wanting to integrate more small-scale solar power systems into Australia's power grid. Among the government proposals expected to pass the legislature is one that taxes the number of solar panels you have on your house. The taxes are slated to be a few cents per kilowatt power produced by your system. Are you getting this? In the future, it would appear that the biggest enemy to solar power will be your own government, who will tax you for producing your own energy. And if you think it's only happening in Australia, well, it's going to spread to every first world country, and I'll tell you why. Turns out the Australian Electric Power Company is very worried because so many Australians have solar power and are going off the grid and selling power back to the grid. The power companies are bleeding red ink, losing billions in revenue as more and more people go solar. In fact, power company bigwigs are predicting what they call a power grid death spiral. They realize now people ditching the grid means ever-decreasing revenues. But wait a minute, that's a good thing, right? It's a great thing. That was the point, going solar, so you don't have to pay those damn utility companies anymore. So power company officials are saying as people get off the grid, they'll have to massively jack up electric charges for customers remaining connected to it. And that just wouldn't be fair. So people with individual solar will have to subsidize them. Ain't socialism grand? The fickle finger of government strikes again. They're going to arbitrarily tax people who thought they were doing something good for themselves and the environment. By the way, the Australian government's calling it a sun tax. Yeah, right, punish people who've switched to solar power. And if you don't think that same legislation is going to pass to the rest of the first world, like the U.S., then you just ain't been paying attention. Sun tax my ass. That said, how's your plan B coming?
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.